You're listening to The Daily Digestionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Traditionalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 16th of May, 2017, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshank, standing in for Matthew Heidmark once again. I'm very pleased to welcome a special guest to us today, a well-known nationalist. You must have seen his speeches at London Forum, and you've also seen his work with one of the most exciting nationalist groups to ever grace the shores of Britain that unfortunately were put a stop to by our dreadful harpy that is our Home Secretary, Amber Rudd. Horrible woman, did away with this fantastic nationalist group. Anyway, Alex was one of the driving force behind this nationalist group that I won't actually mention the name of. So I'm very pleased to welcome today Alex Davies. Alex, how are you doing today?
Oh, Sven, very well. You're too kind.
Well, I know you had a lot of effect on people in Britain and also around Europe, and there are fond memories, definitely fond memories of the group and a lot of the activities that you were involved in. And it would be good, I think, today if we could talk a little bit about British nationalism, what your views are on it, because there doesn't really seem to be much happening since National Action were disbanded. I mean, we've got Britain First, we've got the EDL, they've fallen apart, really. UKIP, they're falling apart. I see that there's this Scottish Dawn group, the exciting group that have started up in Scotland. But there has been a huge demonstration, this Justice for Chelsea demonstration the other day in Sunderland. But I'm not really aware of any nationalist groups that can really take advantage of this. What are your views on British nationalism at the moment and this Justice for Chelsea demonstration?
Okay, well, British nationalism in general is in an absolute mess. It's basically stagnant. And funnily enough, I was reading, as many people probably know, I studied philosophy at uni. I was reading some philosophy for the first time probably in about a year, and the guy I was reading was a guy called Peter Stojtedt, who's like this British-Swedish metaphysician, and he said something which I thought was quite applicable to our political situation, and that is, existence is movement. And when you look at the British nationalist scene at the moment, What are we seeing? Not a lot of. We're not seeing a hell of a lot of movement. We're not going anywhere. And you could argue that if there's a lack of movement, then we're not existing. We're not going anywhere. The Justice for Chelsea thing, I mean, that's another thing in its entire, you know, it reminds me a lot of Rotherham and the reaction that you're getting from people over the Justice for Chelsea campaign is very reminiscent of what you saw at Rotherham. But obviously the problem, and we discussed this before, the problem with that is that people's anger only subsists for a very short amount of time. It's a very short fuse, and after a while it just goes away, it just dissipates. If you look at Rotherham now, what is there, what concrete, what has been left of all those demonstrations that we saw a year or two ago? You know, in 2014, I went to a demonstration in Rotherham, and there were probably about 2,000 or 3,000 people there, and it was huge. It was for a day, despite the fact that the state mobilised a lot of their pigs to come out and try and demonstrate that they still controlled the situation. That day in Rotherham, we owned the city. And they were unable to stop us. That's the power that we had at that time. That's the strength of numbers that we had. And that's kind of what you see in Sunderland again. And Sunderland's only a small city. It's a very small city. It's not a Newcastle or a Birmingham. And yet you're still seeing a hell of a lot of people turn out there. But unfortunately, we've got to look to the long term and think, well, there's not really any organization there apart from your Tommy Robinsons and your Anne-Marie Walters who can take advantage of these situations, which is very, very disheartening because these people aren't on the same wavelength as us. You know, I think Anne-Marie Walters, she's a lesbian, isn't she? Or something like that. You know, she's basically against Islam because she's a gay woman who doesn't like Sharia law.
Yeah, I think it's they're sort of like the British version of the alt-light and the alt-right in America. If you look at Tommy Robinson, he supports Israel. He supports. He doesn't believe in race. He doesn't believe that the white race should be kept pure. And as you say, I think Anne-Marie Walters has admitted that she's a lesbian. But that's the negative side. On the positive side, they are highlighting the problems that are associated with Muslim immigration. They're highlighting the Muslim rape gangs. And these are all things that we're not seeing our politicians doing. And they are helping to put the spotlight on cases like this. And they've helped to put the spotlight on Justice for Chelsea. And Tommy Robinson has been doing some journalism work for Rebel Media, and I think it was largely thanks to him that this case has got all the publicity that it has. And it looked to me like there were about 1,000 people there at this Sunderland protest, not as many people as there were at Rotherham. And as you say, where are the nationalist groups to take advantage of all these people? Who have we got? We've got UKIP that are falling apart. We've got Britain First, and I haven't actually heard Britain First associating themselves with this just yet. I haven't seen any Britain First videos on Justice for Chelsea.
Yeah, well, that's because they haven't got an opportunity here to make money off it, because they can't monopolise the situation. Paul Golding can't make money off it.
I know that.
That's the sad thing about Britain First, is that Britain First is just a money making operation for
that
is a shame. Leadership.
That is a shame, because I am impressed with the way that they have gone after these Muslims. I think it's very visual when they go into these Muslim infested areas holding the crosses up high. It's quite a visual thing to see. And they do seem to make a lot of videos. They get into the newspapers. They get covered by Daily Mail, Daily Express. Although it's negative, they're still well known. But again, they don't seem to be making this much headway. They recently had a protest in London after the London attack, the car that drove up onto the road and killed people. And again, there really didn't seem that many people there.
Mm.
50 people?
Definitely.
60 people? And yet when you look at this one in Sunderland...
A couple hundred.
Yeah, if you look at this one in Sunderland, there's 1,000 people. Because a name and a face has been given to the victim. We've actually seen the victim. We can empathise with the victim. It's not just numbers. I think this is something that could help us in future, is if these victims come forward, wave their anonymity, make a video, say what's happened to them. And I think this will help to keep the momentum going.
Okay. That's fair enough. Obviously... If you can get one of these girls to come forward and go on camera and say, this is what happened to me and this is what these men did to me, then yeah, that does work, because it's emotional. It gets people at the heart, which is, you know, as we all know, it's much more people will do things if it reaches them in the heart rather than if it reaches them in the head. You know, we can put forward all the facts and figures and statistics that we like, and we can win all the rational arguments, but you know, we've been winning the argument for decades, and that hasn't driven people to get out onto the streets and to show their anger and to vent their frustration. I think you're right, you know, because Chelsea has been very brave, and she is a very, very brave girl. If you look at have you seen the video that Rebel Media put out that Tommy Robinson did, the interview that you did with her?
Where he interviewed her, yes. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that was just so, you know, that really sort of got at your heartstrings, you know? And she's a very brave lady, and it does, you know, I don't get me wrong, I think that there's, in terms of how to run a campaign, that's how you do it. You know, you try and bring something to the table that's emotional, that tugs on people's heartstrings, and it's going to get them angry. People aren't going to be docile when faced with something like that. They are going to be driven to actually come out onto the streets and show their anger. And that's what you're seeing. You know, when I think you've mentioned in previous podcasts that you've done, Sven, about the Billy Charlton, the guy who did the speech where he kind of goes, "I am, you know, they call me racist and I am a racist," you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And when you look at and when Tommy Robinson gave his speech at the one last weekend, the people, when they were clapping, it was when he was talking about the fact that they're going to bring in more Syrian refugees, and that what is that going to do for the safety of women in the town, you know, and when he was calling them invaders and things like this, you know, when he was talking a hard game, you know, they were cheering him then. He also said in his speech something like, "We all know that some Muslims are good," and nobody cheered that. Nobody cared. Nobody wanted to hear that. People just wanted to hear a message of strength and defiance, you know, against these people. That's that's all well and good. But, you know, I think the problem is that we wasted an opportunity. If you go back in movement history, we've done this too many times. If you look at maybe 1966 in Chicago, when they were trying to desegregate Chicago, and the AMP got involved in the campaign to oppose that, unfortunately, the local whites sided with moderate groups, with conservative groups, with groups like the National States Rights Party, rather than the AMP, the American Nazi Party, and because of that, eventually, South Chicago was desegregated, and now many of those parts of Chicago are black. And this is the problem. People, the moderates, people like Tommy Robinson, have, and Amory Walters, have access to resources that we simply don't have. We haven't built up our resources. We haven't built up our organizations. Where are the political parties? I want to know where the National Front, British Democratic Party, BNP, Patria, you know, where are all these nationalist political parties? I'm not talking about Britain First or the EDL, but I'm talking about the hardliners. Where are they? They're nowhere to be seen.
They should have been there. They definitely should have been there. Just to say, you're bringing up the example of Chicago then, these areas that turn black, and now Chicago's possibly the most violent city that there is in America. And yeah. Killing's going off there all the time.
And unless we're on the ground, and sort of really engaging with people, and this is kind of the mistake that we made in Rotherham, and this is why we need to be kind of self-critical, and we need to, whenever we do an action, we need to analyze, you know, what we can do better. When we went to Rotherham, I'm talking about National Action now, we went into Rotherham, and every time there was an activity, we mobilized people, we had a presence on the demonstration. What we never did was capitalize on that. We never capitalized on the demonstration to build a local presence. And this is what we need to do. Like, in terms of when we look to the long term, we need to be thinking about building, bases of support, places where we can entrench ourselves and consolidate ourselves and build real power bases, rather than just being dispersed all throughout the country and having no center of power.
So what should really be going on there? You've got a whole town which knows that this is what's going on. You've got a whole town of people that are likely to sympathize with our views. So the National Front should be there trying to sign people up and setting up a group in that town. Is that the sort of thing that you're suggesting, Alex?
Well, I'm not sure about the National Front.
Just for example.
What I would say is that any nationalist organization that wants to really get anywhere needs to understand that there are situations that will arise that you can take advantage of, and if you're not in a position to take advantage of those scenarios, then you're really selling yourself short. It's events that create momentum and energy, and unless you can tap into that momentum and energy, you are not going to be able to build your organization from something that's quite small into something that's quite big and will eventually challenge for power.
I think a similar thing happened after Brexit. I think they were really worried after Brexit that would galvanize the masses to start supporting nationalism. And that's why they clamped down so hard on national action, because that's 17 million people.
Do you really want my opinion on Brexit?
well, just let me, you know, 17 million people voted for Brexit, and that shows us that, as you said earlier, we have already won the argument. We did win the argument. The people in the country wanted to leave the EU, and they wanted to stop to immigration. We were right. We won that argument. But nobody capitalized on it. National Action tried to capitalize on it, and straight away, Amber Rudd stamped down on them, and now National Action are no more. So, yes, give us your views on Brexit.
That's not connected to Brexit, though. That's not connected to Brexit. That's connected to a little murder that happened in Batley and Smen. But when we talk about Brexit, what we need to understand is the same people who were in charge before Brexit are still in charge now. Nothing has changed. All we've done is exchange one form of globalism, which in the form of the EU is a more bureaucratic, centralized form of globalism, with a more free market form of globalism that is unbureaucratic, that allows for the real free flow of capital and labor, which is actually in the long term going to be far more destructive than the EU, because the thing about the EU is that it's there. It's something tangible that people can look to. Something like international capital finance is very abstract, and it's something that people can't really see. Do you know what I mean? It's not something tangible. It's not a parliament. It's not a building. It's not really even a structure. It's a system that people can't see and can't fathom, really. And that's very dangerous.
No, I understand what you're saying there.
And the fact is, even more importantly, is that people think that, this includes many nationalists, people who should know better, with Brexit, they think they've won a victory when they haven't. What has happened now is that people think that the system, through working within the system, they can achieve something, they can gain concessions. But the system is very clever. The system knows that if it can give you a small concession here and there to keep you happy and to keep you meek, that it's all well and it's all good, because the system remains in place. And this is very dangerous, because unless we destroy the system completely, the process that is destroying the white race is going to continue. And this is very dangerous. Don't you agree?
Yeah, well, I do agree, and I see what you're saying there. We can identify the EU as the enemy, and now we all think that we've speared the dragon, we've got rid of the enemy, but we've still got the whole system that's there around it, the whole system of the free market, and we're now looking forward to this, or just looking forward in time to the next election, which we know that Theresa May is going to win by a landslide. She's then going to have a mandate to do whatever the Tories wish to do.
What's happened with UKIP? UKIP has been destroyed because, you know, Brexit has destroyed the only populist kind of force in the country. And before that, it was the populist force, it was UKIP, that helped sow the seeds for the demise of the BNP. And so what we've seen is that as the country's got, you know, if you believe what the media say, the media's somehow got more and more right. So the part of the country has got more and more right wing, apparently, more and more anti-immigration and all the rest of it, more and more intolerant. Yet, if you go back 10 years, you had the BNP on the rise. if we were in 2007 now, we would be looking forward to the BNP winning a seat on the Greater London Assembly. We'd be looking forward to the BNP breaking through into the European Parliament. Now the BNP has less than 500 members and doesn't have a single elected councillor. If you look at UKIP, UKIP have just been wiped out, absolutely wiped out. And they're not even a nationalist party. They're a kind of populist party.
I think
they made it wiped out.
Yeah, well, they you know? I think they made a big mistake.
This is what I mean. The system has stitched up the situation so finely. They've got everything in place to maintain their power, maintain their grip on the situation. what we thought with Brexit, what people were saying, you know, people like Richard Edmonds were saying that the establishment is in chaos. No, I think the establishment knew exactly what they were doing. I think they were very, very clever, and they played it to a T. Right. And I think not just any establishment, but the Tory establishment have played it to a T. The worst type of people to have in power, because unlike the Labour government, they are kind of strong and stable. They manage things a lot better. They keep the economy going. But at the same time, they still allow in all of these immigrants. They still allow for the conquering of our nation by alien peoples. And at the same time, they clamp down on civil liberties. Thatcher did this. Major did this. Major brought in the 1994 Criminal Justice Act, which gave the police so many new powers to police demonstrations and public events and all these types of things. Thatcher brought in new race relations laws. Under May, we had the first banning of a nationalist organisation since the Second World War.
So it has gradually been getting worse. If you look at things in the long term, I think then you see that. And if we look at things
things. My point is that it happens under Tory government as well as Labour government. In fact, the Tories are worse because they can present this illusion of a competent government. At least with Labour, you know that you're getting incompetence. You know that you're getting something that's really bad and that can be painted as bad.
With
the Conservatives, you don't get that.
It's
much harder to paint the Conservatives as this evil anti-British party because they don't fall into the same traps as Labour do. You mentioned, remember when we were talking before this, you mentioned Leanne Wood. Leanne Wood, the leader of Plaid Cymru, she did an interview recently and she said that what we get with Theresa May is a very well-crafted person, and that's true. And we got that with David Cameron as well. These very well-crafted personas that are very hard to pin down and criticise. And that's very dangerous because at least with somebody like Corbyn, it's somebody ideological and you can combat that person ideologically. With somebody like Theresa May, who's an arch pragmatist, who is, you know, against Brexit one minute and for it the next, you don't know where to stand on her. And that's very dangerous.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. At least with Corbyn, he's got a character there. I mean, I sympathise with some of the things he suggests: nationalising the railways, nationalising water. That's the sort of thing we want to hear. But then he wants to open all the borders up and bring everyone in. Anyone can come in, which is the biggest threat of them all. But at least he does believe in what he's saying with Theresa May. It's just whatever she's being told to say. She'll just do it. Like ban Matthew Heimbach, she'll just do it. Ban National Action, she'll just do it. Say that she's going to stop immigration, she'll say that. But we know that she won't. She was Home Secretary and she failed miserably to slow any of the immigration down. I mean, the only real light at the end of the tunnel I see is the more they allow the immigration to happen, the more crimes there are going to be, like this one that's happened to Chelsea. And that's why I'm saying we need more people to come forward when these crimes happen to them and make their face known, make their story known, because this will wake people up to it. And eventually we will have to have a political movement, a political party that stands for what we need a political party to stand for the white British people. UKIP should have been doing that. They should have become more radical. As soon as the Brexit vote happened, they should have become more radical. They should have become an anti-immigration party, even just an anti-Islam party. But instead, they just wishy-washy. Liberal. UKIP, Paul Nuttall didn't even turn up at that Justice for Chelsea demonstration. He lied to the public about where he was actually living when he stood for election. The guy just comes across as untrustworthy. He was hanging around outside mosques giving leaflets out, trying to suck up to the Muslims. When, as we saw this Justice for Chelsea demonstration, it was when Tommy Robinson was more radical, more extremist, that is what got the support. And before that, it was a working class guy from the middle of town saying, well, if that's what being a racist is, I'm proud to be a racist. That's what got all the support. And that's what would get Paul Nuttall the support, if he would stand up and be a man and grow some balls. But I don't think he will.
Yeah.
I don't think he will.
The thing with party politics is that at the end of the day, democracy is not going to, and this is the point I'm trying to make with Brexit, democracy isn't going to bring us the outcome that we need. At the end of the day, you know, white revolution is the only solution. And I don't just mean that as a fancy slogan that sounds good. I mean that in a literal sense. We need to have a revolution. Otherwise, we are not going to get anywhere. The final victory that we need is not going to come about. And people, the worst people, I think, are the people on our side who know the truth, who are too busy thinking and writing about it, because that won't get us there. Only a serious step-by-step program of organized action is going to bring that about. And once we get our fallible and undependable selves sublimated to this idea of total revolution, then the rest will come easy, because when compared to the endless nowhere drag of the past 7 years since the BNP collapsed, things are going to get a hell of a lot easier once we actually have a real plan in place that's going to work and actually bring about not just sort of some sort of temporal upward trajectory, which you get in elections. You know, if we got a party together and it started getting decent electoral results, yeah, we would have a temporary spike. You know, we'd have a little temporary morale boost. But I tell you what, even if you got to the point where Nationalist Party was going to take power, do you think the Jews, the Blacks, all of the Reds, least of all the entrenched system manned by sick liberal whites, is going to give up, say, there we are, fair fight, you won the election, they're going to shake our hands and turn it all over to us? I think that's just far too crazy to even contemplate.
Well, we can almost see that happening in America with Donald Trump, who is just the softest of the soft of civic nationalists. And just look at the way the left has galvanized against him and made all these alliances, feminists, Negroes, Mexicans, homosexuals, all coming out against him, all trying to put stops in his way, legislation, all sorts of dirty tricks they're using to try and prevent him from actually carrying out any of his policies. Pretty much stopped him from being able to carry anything out. And what he needed to do is have it's not just enough to have a movement. He has to have a group behind him of people that he could replace all these leftists with. He needed people that he could put into power, into government. So I think maybe that's sort of what you're saying there, Alex, is about having a group and having people that designated people that learn things that need to be done, so that when we do take power, we've got the people there, competent people that can carry out these roles that are needed. And to get to that stage, I mean, I'm a firm believer that it all starts with self-discipline.
I'm talking about systemic change. Yeah, I'm talking about complete systemic change. I'm not just talking about maintaining, America, the Republic, with all its checks and balances. In Britain, I'm not just talking about maintaining parliamentary democracy, a system that tells the people that democracy is, or the only change that you can have in your life is voting every 4 or 5 years, because that just limits participation in how society is run. And that breeds apathy. It breeds frustration. It breeds alienation. Just look at what it did to the BNP, a party that at one point had 14,000 members. It destroyed, part of democracy and this idea that the only way that you can get change is by millions of other sheep casting their ballots for the right candidate. And if it doesn't happen this time around, you have to wait another 5 years. That's what broke the BNP in a major way. That's what bred so much alienation with politics. And the thing is that the reality is that change only comes when people move away from that sort of political consumerism, where you're given spoon-fed choices, and move towards active resistance and militant organizing, where you can actually have change in your day-to-day life. And that's what I mean when I talk about building building bases of support, building our own power structure, building a parallel society. That's what we're that's what I'm talking about, and that's what I think we need.
Well, I agree that is definitely what we need, and I think it does begin with self discipline. And I'm heartened to see that I do see people having more strength of character, being more interested in improving themselves rather than turning up at demonstrations drunk. I was very impressed with your recent speech at the Northwest Forum, which if people haven't actually heard that, at the Yorkshire Forum rather, people haven't actually heard that, they really should do, because you touched on some of these subjects there as well. Alex, we've come to the end of the podcast, so I'd just like to say thank you very much for coming on. I think this has been a wonderful podcast. I think people are really going to appreciate the insights that you've given them today. So thank you very much.
It's been too short, I think. I think it's been too short.
Well, we'll have to get you on again then. That's what that means. Okay.
Cheers, man.
Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with a Florian Geyer. So until then, hail victory.
Be tuned into The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at RadioArea.com.